Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. The supper being ended, the devil having now put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he was come from God, went to God, and riseth from supper, and laid aside his garments, and took a towel, and girded himself. And after that he poureth water into a basin, and began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with a towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter saith unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? And Jesus answered and said unto him, What I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. And Peter saith unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. And Jesus answered him, If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. And Simon Peter said unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but my hands and my head. Jesus saith unto him, He that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit, and ye are clean, but not all. For he knew who should betray him, therefore he said, Ye are not all clean. So after he had washed their feet, and taken his garments, and was set down again, he said unto them, Know ye what I have done unto you? Ye call me Master and Lord, and ye say well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that ye should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If ye know these things, happy are ye if ye do them. Now, friend, observe that this is a record of a very important event in the life of Christ on earth. It took place during his last week, just prior to his crucifixion. Several momentous events occurred during those few days, including his entry into Jerusalem, various discourses with the Greeks, the cleansing of the temple, stormy sessions with his enemies, giving instructions for the observance of the Passover. This event took place on what we call Thursday evening during the week of the last Passover. It was during this gathering that he instituted the Lord's Supper, choosing the ingredients to be used and assigning the significance of them, noting when this memorial was to be observed, once his kingdom came. This passage also tells us how he washed his disciples' feet. It was a trying and sad time in the life of Christ. This was his final assembly with his hand-picked apostles before his death on the cross. And after this would come the agony of the Garden of Gethsemane, the heart-rending experience of being betrayed by Judas, being turned over to his enemies in the trials and the crucifixion. All that Jesus could expect from this moment forward was the worst kind of mental and emotional and physical pain, grief, and torture and disappointment. Verse 1 tells us that Jesus knew his hour was come that he would depart out of this world unto the Father. He knew the end was near. And this was a sad hour also because he dearly loved his apostles. Saying goodbye often comes with difficulty among loved ones, especially when you know there awaits great hardship for all that are involved. And even though the apostles were not aware of the implications of all that were taking place, Jesus was very aware of what it meant to him and to them, as well as to us. We're reminded of that sad farewell given to Paul, recorded in Acts chapter 20, when Paul said goodbye to his brethren at Ephesus, with whom he had labored so patiently and faithfully. Their mutual love was strong. Jesus showed his love for his apostles this night by calling them his friends and praying for their welfare and guidance, asking for their protection, and even being an arbitrator for their release when the mob came to seize him. Verse 1 reads, Having loved his own, He loved them unto the end. This was also a sad hour for Jesus, because those whom he loved were still so unprepared and unsuspecting of what would soon take place. Men would array themselves against the Son of God in a vicious and determined manner. Whenever people do this, always it results in detriment. What was ironic about the vindictive actions taken this night? They would be done by the very ones Jesus came to save, and to whom he first went. The truth would be mocked, and God would be blasphemed as he was ridiculed. Justice would be denied, and hatred displayed. This must have been an exceptionally difficult hour for our Lord. And not only that, his own chosen 12 would forsake him. One would betray him, another deny him, deny that he ever even knew him, not only once, but twice, three times. They all would be ashamed and afraid to be identified with him. All of this was in the heart of Jesus as he rises to perform the service of washing the feet of his disciples. And why did Jesus do this? What did he seek to accomplish? We can more easily grasp and understand what Jesus was doing if we know the background of the occasion and become aware of the serious problem that had developed even among the apostles. Of course, one problem was Judas and his behavior. Friend, Jesus loved Judas, but Judas allowed greed and jealousy and hatred and selfishness and other evils to find root in his heart. He cultivated himself so that the devil found fertile soil to plant the seeds of betrayal. The apostles had argued among themselves also. They discussed who would be the greatest after Jesus left them. They did not even comprehend the impact of Jesus leaving, but still they argued over their rank and their position. While Jesus was with them, this subject need not arise. But he told them that he would leave. Rather than being concerned about that, they were concerned about who would be chief among them. Now, this was not the first time this problem had arisen. Jesus and John came with their mother to Jesus one day, and she asked him the favor that her sons would sit on his right hand and on his left hand in his kingdom. Of course, she did not understand the nature of the kingdom he was to establish, nor the impropriety of her request. But she touched off maneuvering among the apostles for position. Jealousy aroused them. Luke tells of this trouble on the very evening, Luke 22:24, and he said, "And there was also strife among them, which of them should be accounted the greatest." With all of the trials hovering over Jesus at this moment, he was pained to see this strife among them, their competition, their concern for self, their desire for power and prestige and rank among others. It was a sorry display of misunderstanding on the part of the apostles just here. But has this desire for rank among brethren ceased to exist? Jesus, having often taught his disciples by words, now turns to teach them by deeds. He teaches a lesson that both they and every follower of Christ must learn. He assumes the role of a servant, even though he is master of all. He humbles himself and performs the menial task usually done by the lowly. He had said, "Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven," Matthew 18:4. Again, "But Jesus called them unto him and said, Ye know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them. But it shall not be so among you. But whosoever shall be great among you, let him be your minister. And whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many." Matthew 20:25-28. A similar teaching is recorded in Luke chapter 22. Jesus, the Master, was teaching humility and service to others, doing as he had spoken. Now, this task of washing the feet of the disciples was something none of the others had assumed. To have done so would have been an admission of lowliness and not becoming one of seeking a position. When guests came to the home, the servants of the host would perform this work. But now all wanted to be the guest of honor, important and prominent. Being in a rented room, none felt obligated to serve. So Jesus humbled himself before them and does what the others thought beneath them to do. Particular attention is given to Peter's reaction to all of this. When Jesus came to him, he seemed to realize that Jesus was doing what some of them ought to have done, and he refused to let Jesus wash his feet. But Jesus said in substance, "Either you let me teach you this lesson, or you have no part of me." And Peter quickly relented. Is it not true that we cannot have fellowship with Christ if we are void of humility and have a willingness to serve? We must learn how Jesus humbled himself and served. Is he not our example to do as he has done? I have often tried to imagine the scene when Jesus bowed before Judas to wash his feet. Judas, of course, was still present at this time, and he knew that he had planned to betray Jesus. And Jesus also knew what Judas had planned. What a tense and agonizing moment it must have been, not only for Judas, but certainly for Jesus, seeing how Judas was condemning himself. By washing the disciples' feet, Jesus was teaching by a great and unparalleled object lesson the blessedness, the appropriateness, the Christ-likeness of service and humility, the sacrifice of pride that must be a part of the Christian character. How the Lord must grieve when there is strife among brethren over position and rank and power and prestige and glory among men. Did not John severely condemn Diotrephes because he wanted to have the preeminence among the brethren? 3 John and verse 9. By this action, Jesus answered the great question with a great answer. Who shall be the greatest? The Lord responds, the one who is humble, the one who serves. James 4 and verse 6. God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace to the humble. In Luke 14, 7 through 11, and he put forth a parable to those which were bidden, when he marked how they chose out the chief rooms, saying unto them, when thou art bidden of any man to a wedding, sit not down in the highest room, lest a more honorable man than thou be bidden of him, and he that bade thee and him come and say to thee, give this man place, and thou begin with shame to take the lowest room. But when thou art bidden, go and sit down in the lowest room, that when he that bade thee cometh, he may say unto thee, friend, go up higher. Then thou shalt have worship in the presence of them that sit at meat with thee. For whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. Proverbs 29:23. Pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Better it is to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. Now some have mistakenly made foot washing a religious act of worship, a ceremony, as if the act itself is what Jesus was commanding. They call it a church ordinance. It is never so identified in Scripture, nor is there any example anywhere of the early church practicing the washing of feet as an act of worship or anything other than an act of hospitality. In fact, it's mentioned only once after Pentecost, 1 Timothy 5 and verse 10, and it is a qualification for women who were to be supported by the church. She was to have demonstrated hospitality. Foot washing is listed several times as an act of hospitality and caring for the needs of others, but never a religious act in worship. Foot washing is an act of kindness and of service and hospitality, and it ought not be changed into something the Lord never taught or intended. It is not a religious ceremony. To so use it is more of a display of a pseudo-piety than anything else. Usually both feet are not washed anyway by those who contend that this was an act that Jesus was commanding. When Jesus said, if I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet, for I have given you an example that ye should do as I have done unto you. And he explained the meaning of his words, Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If he served, so should they serve. He, as master and Lord, was to send them forth. They were not above doing what the master did. And when he encountered Peter's refusal to accept his service, Jesus told him he really didn't understand what Jesus was doing. Peter could see that Jesus was washing feet, but that was not what he was really doing as far as the significance of this act was concerned. He was teaching a lesson that we all must learn, which is humility and service. He said, "Do you know what I am doing?" They didn't grasp it at first. It was the lesson of humility that Jesus is teaching. He was certainly not ordaining some kind of act of worship. In Matthew 23 and verse 12, "And whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted." James 4 and verse 10, "Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up." Colossians 3 and verse 12, "Put on therefore, as the elect of God, humbleness of mind." 1 Peter 5, 5 and 6, "Yea, all of you be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. For God resisteth the proud, and giveth grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time." This has been A Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.